This is Linda. Hi.
Hello, Linda.
Hi.
Hey, it's Michael Rogers again. We're just waiting for Eddie to tie in. How are you doing today?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good.
I don't know if we discussed any of the details, but the purpose of this call is just to get a technical pulse on you. We've got a number of placements, and we need to make a determination as to which role each person is going to be best suited for.
Okay.
So when Eddie ties in, which should be any moment, he'll just go through some general questions and just answer them to the best of your ability, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you.
How's your holiday weekend going?
Oh, it's going great. It was raining yesterday and some today, but it has stopped. It's supposed to be real nice tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to that.
And
I'm in
Statesboro, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
I handle our Eastern Coast business on my end. I think you're in North Carolina, correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, it is. I love it.
I'm actually looking for your resume here. There it is. Yeah, the Raleigh area. How far are you from Asheville?
5 hours or so.
5 hours? Okay.
Uh-huh.
I've been there a number of times. I live close to Savannah, Georgia, about maybe 45 minutes, an hour away. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a nephew who moved there a few years ago for a coaching position to Savannah, rather. So I visited him a few times. So I'm familiar as to where it is.
Savannah's nice.
Yeah, it is very nice.
I've lived in a lot of different cities throughout my life. Most of them East Coast, except for Tennessee. I lived in Nashville and Memphis for a while.
Oh.
But I really enjoy the Savannah area. Outside of the heat in the middle of the summer, it's really
definitely nice.
Yeah. But that's why I asked about Asheville. I've never been to Raleigh. But Asheville's, it's kind of close to the Savannah kind of atmosphere. It's a little bit smaller, I think, but the mountains make up for it. I love the mountains.
Yeah, I love the mountains as well. I was up there, was it last year? Yeah. In the fall.
Eddie.
Hey, Eddie, you on?
Yeah. That was weird. I went to Dallas one thing because I was sitting there and kept saying I was the only one there.
Huh. Well, I apologize for that. I'll have our stuff checked out. But we've got Linda on the line. She's here. She's here in Raleigh virtually with us. So, Linda, this is Eddie. Eddie, this is Linda.
Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks.
Good. That's great.
I'm trying to come through and look at your resume now.
Okay.
I said it earlier. Okay. Well, I tell you what, we'll start off really quick then. And let me start by saying this, that while this might be an interview process, I'm not necessarily looking for somebody to have all the right answers. There are sometimes people get a little frustrated if they get something wrong or not.
Okay.
The right answer, the wrong answer isn't necessarily the crux of everything that we're looking for. What we're trying to gauge is where you might be able to fit into the project. There are several different roles that are available. We want to make sure that we place the right people in the right roles. And so if there's a spot on the project still that we think that you can fill, well, then that's where we're going to try to put you in the most appropriate spot.
Okay.
So, why don't you take about 1 minute or so and kind of sum up what you've done for IT or inside IT?
Okay. Well, my past experience consisted of doing installations, configurations, migrations, and repairing and also maintaining servers and computer-based systems. Was also responsible for maintaining documentation during upgrades or replacement on customer hardware and software systems, assisted customers and users with any questions or problems they had regarding both software, hardware and software application issues. Did troubleshoot hardware, software, and networking problems. This was done both over the phone and at customer sites. And I was also involved with training new users or employees or and field system administrators as well.
What was the last part you said you did for system? I'm having a hard time hearing you. What was the last part you said about system administrators?
Oh, I trained field system administrators.
Oh, okay. Was that an OJT on the job training type,
yes.
or was that like in a training center?
On the job training.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, that sounds good then, Linda. I'll start asking some questions. A couple reasons for that as to why I'm asking you to tell me a little something is because I don't want to start asking you the questions that I know for a fact are out of your wheelhouse, so to speak.
Okay.
Let me pull back. Okay. So you've got quite a few things on here. Okay, that's right. You're the one with Glaxo Smith. It looks like that was a pretty long project that you're involved in, doing a global file share.
As you said, it was a project. They brought me in to essentially assist them with finding a software that would allow their custodians or the gatekeepers of the data for the file shares to actually give their users or people who need access to the data permissions. So I was involved with doing that. Once they found a software, I assisted them with doing the testing and so forth before they actually put it in production. I also, while we were going through trying to find that particular product, I was responsible for actually giving access to users for data shares as well. And, of course, I created data shares. This was on both Windows-based systems, NetApp filers, and so forth.
Okay. How about this then? I see that you're, since you're dealing with file shares, how about I target a couple questions toward that then?
Okay.
How about when you create a file share, how would you lock that down? What types of permissions would you put on? Well, here, let me just get a little bit more directed then. Sometimes the ambiguous questions may not be the best then. How many different types of NTFS permissions exist? NTFS permissions.
I know you asked that. I think, let me go down, is create, delete, your list files, read,
okay, well, actually,
modify.
You know what, here, let me interrupt you there. Yeah, let me interrupt you there. So, yes, you're correct, but you're a little bit more detailed. That was going to be my next question since we're looking at these. But even a little bit higher level than that, you're looking at the special permissions on there. How much are the overall – how about all the – just the overall rules? Like, I tell you what, I'll give you a hint of one of them. Write is one of them.
Well, I forgot write out of that, what you asked me. Oh, you asked me at the file level or – the share level itself.
Oh, file or folder level. But, you know, whenever you go to assign NTFS permissions, you've got a set of roles and they get more granular. So there's actually five or six sets of, hold on, one, two, three, four, five. Hold on, now I got to think. Yeah, it is.
Well,
role, modify.
First of all, the administrator has to be there. Group has to be there in order for you to actually assign permissions. It's
right.
Under the NTFS permissions.
Yes, that's correct.
There's the main ones we use, write the right permissions, and permission or read-only permission, because sometimes you want a user to have access just to be able to read what's in the share.
Okay. Right, yep.
And they write to it. If you need for them to write to it, then you give them the right permissions. Mainly, we set up groups. I set up groups to be and actually assign the permissions to the particular group.
Right.
Exactly. We don't actually give permissions to the individual ID. I'm sorry?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. So whenever you're doing this, you need to make sure that you take groups and you assign permissions to groups and not to users. But what I'm looking for is, and I think that you've hit most of them, so I'll call them out to you really quick. You've got full control, modify, read and execute.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I would go at full control, modify, write, and read and so forth.
Yep,
yeah, full control
okay.
is administrative. We usually give that to the administrative group.
Exactly, yeah. So when you get in that, then you got your special permissions. Inside your special permissions, you got a bunch of others. So you got those top level six, and then you got others that you're talking about too. That's when you get into the read only attribute.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I don't know why I didn't go at that.
Nope,
yeah.
That's fine. Nope, you did good. I could tell that you're all around it. That's good. That was a hard question to ask, without giving the answer, but you did hit on something else too. From an Active Directory permission, Active Directory standpoint, why is it recommended best practices that you assign permissions to a shared folder, to a group, and not explicitly assign them to a user?
Because, for one thing, it's just easier to have it set. I mean, assign permissions to the actual group itself.
I would agree with that, but that's not the official answer.
I know.
Yes, you're right.
But I'm trying. I understand. But I've got to. I mean, I know because I was in that environment. Individual. Oh, okay. Because in NTFS, when you go into the security section under NTFS. When you list a lot of users, then you have, I mean, it's simpler just to put them in the group as opposed to adding them in individually, because I think there's a maximum as to how many groups or objects you can have.
Yep, so the official answer is yes, you're right. From an administrative perspective, it is far easier to control the members of a group than it is to a file share. Especially if the names of the file share changes, you just change the group name in one particular place.
Exactly.
But the official answer from Microsoft is because if you explicitly assign a user to a file share, when you go to clone or copy his or her account, when they leave the company and you want somebody else to have the same privileges, explicit permissions do not copy over, but group memberships do.
All right.
Okay, so that's good. You're all over it. That's good. Let me see what else here. Okay, here's a question for you. Still talking about file shares.
Okay.
If I call you up and I say, hey, Linda, I'm trying to access folder X over on server number one.
Mm-hmm.
Folder X is the share name. I'm supposed to have full control on it, but I can't write anything to it. I can't create a new folder. Help me troubleshoot this. What would you look for?
I look under the share permissions first to make sure that, well, no, you need to make sure
I would agree with you. I would agree. Why would you look there first?
Because they have to have access to that particular share. If they don't have, if they're not in a group under share permissions that will allow them access to that share, then even though they have NTFS permissions, they're listed on the NTFS permissions group, they still won't be able to get to it.
Ah, very good. That's what I was looking for. Okay, absolutely. So if there's a conflict between share permissions and NTFS permissions,
mm-hmm.
the most restrictive between the two apply.
Exactly.
So if you've got full control NTFS permissions, but you've got read-only share permissions, whenever I come across the folder X share, I only have the inherent a read-only permission from the share.
Right.
However, if you reverse that and you give me full control share permissions and read-only NTFS permissions, I still only have read-only because the most restricted between the two is
right.
going to be NTFS. Very good.
Exactly.
All right. Hold on. Let me flip back here to your resume. Do-do-do-do. Good answer. I recognize how hard it is to answer some questions off the cuff like this, but you're doing good.
Thank you, sir.
So if I come back through here, you've got... Okay, you said you edited the NTFS or the NT file shares using Active Directory and User Manager tools. What Active Directory tools specifically did you use?
That product that I was telling you about is called Directory Resource and Administrator. That's the program that was brought in-house, tested, and they used for setting up or granting people access. It also interfaces with Active Directory. So I was able to create groups, create file shares and so forth directly into the database, AD database. With before that product came into play, I used the administrative tool, Active Directory users and computers for creating groups and users and so forth.
Okay.
And managing the objects.
Have you had to create user accounts before?
Yeah. I've done that when I was with... well, in my past job, and also with when I was with EDS, with the Postal Service.
Okay.
Of course, they started off with an NDS, Novell environment, and then they migrated over to Active Directory, and I was involved with setting up the organizational units for each division or state, however. And, of course, we had to create the users and groups and so forth, do modifications.
Okay. Sounds good. How about group policy? Did you have to deal – you mentioned organizational units. Did you have to deal with group policies much?
I've dealt with group policies, but they came more from, like, the development section and so forth. I didn't actually have to create them myself.
Okay. So could you troubleshoot an end-user workstation? So if I've got a workstation that says – I'm supposed to be getting a certain policy stamped and pushed out and vetted out by Active Directory, and I'm not getting it. Do you know what tool or sets of tools that you could use to assist you in troubleshooting that?
It's been a while. When I did a conversion over to AD, I was laid off, so I actually didn't have any involvement with doing that. But I'm sure I could troubleshoot it. I would know what to do.
Okay. Well, and whenever you did do the migration over to Active Directory, what did you, what was your role there?
Once we did that, of course, all the objects and so forth were migrated over. My job was to make sure that the workstations got upgraded, promoted, or installed into the domain and so forth. Any software issues they had, any hardware issues they had, I had to resolve those.
I'm sorry, say that right before the domain. What did you say you had to do about going over to the new domain?
Oh, add them computers into the domain.
Okay, and how did you do that? Was that a manual process or was that done through a tool?
It was a manual process because we went into, my computers on the system, I believe, and just put in the domain and ask for it to be promoted to the system to be promoted to the domain, whatever the name.
Gotcha.
Is.
Okay. So you did this manually. Okay. So
yeah,
let me
did it manually. I'm sorry. I do have to want to point this out. After we initially did it manually, then they set up a process like a RIS server, a RIS, remote installation server, when I went to, when I was traveling around, or actually when I went to Washington in order for the workstations to be created. I mean, operating systems to be installed and on the desktop rather. We ran PXE and let it attach to the RIS server, and then the software or the operating system was pushed down. And then we would promote it to the domain.
Okay. That's good, then. So let me tell you, let me break off here just a little bit and ask or let you know kind of what's happening here. And you tell me if you think you have the comfort level to do this. You've done a portion of this, but certainly in a different magnitude. So there's roughly 20,000 users that were migrating.
Okay.
It's an Active Directory migration, similar to what you've gone through before. But you can't use RIS servers or anything for this. We're using outside third-party tools that we have to set up, and we'll be setting that up. You won't have to be responsible for that. So the people who have knowledge of the tool set will be doing that.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry so much about that. But defining a process to actually do the migration from one forest or one domain to another. Yep. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, Linda.
I'm going to hang up and dial back in because I can't hear you.
Okay. Okay, do that. Eddie, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right.
Did you hear me talking?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Did you hear me whenever she was saying hello?
Yeah, I heard you too. Whatever happened there happened on her end.
Wonder if she can dial back in.
You think that might have been a bail?
No.
This is Linda. Hi.
Hi, Linda.
Hey, Linda.
I'm sorry. I don't know what happened, but.
Oh, that's okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So reiterating really quick, so this project here involves 20,000 users and computers. We have to migrate them from one Active Directory forest to another. Doing that, we're using a third-party tool set called Quest. That Quest tool set, you don't need to worry about setting that up. We have people who know the tool fairly well. They'll be setting it up. But this role that we're looking for is somebody who can help to identify a process and help to troubleshoot a process. So once the process is developed and stood up, the migration happened, but it happens all remotely. So when I say remotely, remote from the user. So you don't have to walk out to the user's workstation and open up computer management and actually join them to the new domain. Instead, it's being done remotely from another console called the Quest console.
Okay.
One of the things that it does, which is right up your alley, which is it re-permissions everything on the workstation, everything.
Oh.
To make
sure
that the new user account and the new domain can read that just fine, and they still maintain access. In addition to that, it migrates it over to the brand new domain, whatever domain that's going to be.
Okay.
Sometimes during that migration process, the workstation gets hung either in the old domain or in the new domain, and it's those times that we need somebody who knows what to do to troubleshoot it. Sometimes it's that. It can't resolve the old domain name. It can't resolve the new domain name. Sometimes it just gets stuck in between. Sometimes the ACLs have been messed up. We do everything that we can to do proactive due diligence to make sure that does not happen, but occasionally it does. So that's the primary role that we're looking for here. Does that sound like something that you'd be interested in? Or
definitely.
Definitely.
I know I will be able to do the job.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let me flip back to your resume one more time. I keep moving away from it for some reason. Hold on. One of the problems that we have issues with sometimes is DNS and or DHCP. I see that you've got that listed in your resume. Can you tell me anything that you know about DNS?
Domain name service. You just have to make sure that the service is set up. It actually allows you to access the internet and so forth. In order for you to be able to access the domain, that has to be installed.
Okay. All right. Fine. Do you know how you would troubleshoot that? If I tell you that Workstation Y can't log into the domain and I think it's a DNS issue, can you check that for me? Would you know what to do?
I would go into the network session on the desktop and make sure under IP, TCP/IP, to make sure it's enabled. Okay. Now, I guess that would depend on if the address that was used, the internet address IP address, was a static or was it obtained from DHCP? If it was obtained from DHCP, then I will go out and do a renew and release in order to refresh or get a new IP address.
Okay, perfect. Because all these would most likely be DHCP related, but if they are DHCP related, how do you read the IP address there?
Go out.
How do you know if it's got a valid IP?
You can go to a DOS prompt and type ipconfig.
Okay, very good.
Slash all or
So if you look at it and you say, yes, it's got a good IP address, how do you know what DNS server it's pointing to?
It should list the DNS server as well.
Very good. Okay. And how do you test that? If you say, well, if I tell you I think it's a DNS issue, how do you report back to me and you tell me, yes, Eddie, I do believe that it's a DNS issue, or no, it's not? How would you actually test that? I give you a hint. You're almost there right now with everything we just talked about.
Maybe you can ping the host name and so forth.
There you go. Host name of what?
And the IP address itself, or...
Of what, though?
Of the domain name server.
You said ping the host name of the DNS server?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Assume that comes
or
back.
Or you can
okay.
do a NDS lookup to make sure that.
Okay, NDS lookup. Okay, very good. All right, good enough. You know what? That's good. I was looking for a couple other things, but I think that you're all over it. I think showing you once or twice that you pick up on that, okay? You're all over it. So one of the things that you could do is you would actually ping the near side of the router and the far side of the router by looking at the default gateway inside the IP config.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You will ping the router, yeah.
No, that's good, though. You know, and then whether or not you ping the IP and get response or the name and get response lets you know where an issue might be. So if you were to go to the workstation, you say, yes, Eddie, it's DHCP. Yes, it's pointing to the right DNS server. Yes, I can ping the name of the DNS server. Yes, I can ping the IP of the DNS server. Yes, I can ping the router. And, yes, I've got a server name that I know exists inside of the DNS server. All of that works. You could confidently tell me that DNS is not an issue there.
Right.
Almost confidently. There is one other thing that you could do, which is if you ping that workstation name from somewhere else, if you get back the NetBIOS name versus the fully qualified domain name, that means that DNS may not be working. With me saying that, do you know what I mean whenever I say that? And if so, and before you answer, I'm going to ask if you do, I'd like for you to explain it to me. If you go to another workstation and you ping the workstation Y that has an issue and you receive the NetBIOS name instead of the fully qualified domain name, I'm telling you there might be a problem with DNS. Do you know what that means whenever I say that?
Right now I can't. I mean, I probably won't come up with the right answer that you need. I mean, if I thought about it more, I mean, have time to think about it, then I'm pretty sure I probably will come up with it.
Fair enough. And just so that you know, Linda, showing you that would be a one-time deal. I don't even lose any sleep over that. You've got enough information up to that point. You knew how to do the IP config, the release and renew, the showing the DNS server. That's good. I would say this job would have a lot of that going into it. Now, this has a tendency to be high stress and fast-paced. Are you okay working in an environment like that?
Hey, I worked in the Postal Service, so that was high stress. So, yes, I wouldn't have a problem with doing that.
Okay.
Working in that particular environment.
Well, that sounds good, then. I think we're coming up on our time. We got somebody else dialing in. So we got about another dozen or so interviews to do.
Okay.
And we're looking for, actually, I guess we got a little bit more than a dozen because, no, I guess about a dozen or so left to do. I'm not sure when we're going to have an answer back. And what we're looking for are the eight, you know, the top eight of the 12 or 14 people total that we're interviewing.
Oh, okay. That's
and
great.
So I will get back with Michael here, and once we compile our results, and Mike will be back in touch with you as soon as he hears an answer from us, and that's probably going to be somewhere, if I had to guess, no later than Wednesday or Thursday of next week, because we'd need you on site the week after that. So,
okay.
What we're looking for, now, do you have any problem with travel?
No, I don't have any problems with traveling.
You're in Raleigh, right? RTP?
Yeah, I'm in Raleigh, close to RTP.
Okay. It's a nice area, isn't it?
Yes, very nice.
I love
very
that
nice.
Area. All right, that sounds good. Then, and this project would actually end up being in Maryland.
Oh, okay.
That's
great.
That's one thing, Eddie, that hasn't been discussed, I don't think, at this point, was the change in the site of the project.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, Michael. So, Linda, most likely whenever Michael spoke with you, he was telling you Indiana. Literally as of late last night, the war room, so to speak, has been changed from Indiana to Hanover, Maryland. So with that being said, does that change the dynamics for you at all?
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. Hey, I want to appreciate or thank you for your time. I appreciate you joining and participating here. And Michael should have an answer from us probably sometime no later than Wednesday or so of next week.
Okay. Thank you, sir, for your time
thank
as well.
You. Absolutely.
Thank
hey, you have
Michael.
A good Easter.
You too.
Right, thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye, Linda.